still the best government in the world. And what do we do if we don't have this form of government? We've got to get rid of the bad guys. We've got to get rid of this political divisiveness. Mm-hmm. And that's why nothing gets accomplished. And so I don't know what the alternatives are. We still have the best system in the world.
Well, I agree
with that. It is the best. It is the best. Yeah. And when you look back in history, I mean, you look at Abraham Lincoln and how he was vilified in the things that was done to that man. He was a great, great leader. And he took the arrows in the chest and literally died for his cause. This is not a very neat system of government. And it's meant to be messy. It's meant to be argumentative. It's meant to be, you know, we're supposed to throw ideas down and rally around and discuss them. I mean, our system of government is a republic, and it's meant to have debate. And some of the debate, yes, it's ugly, but it should be civil. I really believe it should be. But, you know, there are times people become very passionate, and I'm one that you could throw in that category. I'm very passionate about the Constitution, though, because that's what really makes us different than every other government in the world.
Well, the big question on everyone's mind, it's a gender thing, or is it? World peace, religion, sex, money, politics, climate change, big business, big ideas and big egos. Nothing is off limits. As I'm joined by some of the most accomplished and highly opinionated women from the far left, the far right, and the far reaches of the planet. This is Malcolm Out Loud, and you're listening to Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. So Big Brother, in this case the CIA, is using everyday devices to spy on us. When I seen this story, there was a lot of talk like about the Samsung televisions, that they can spy on you, and like they can take your car controls over, and like they're saying, actually there's some interesting people that are saying like do like assassinations through taking the controls of your car over. Ava Armstrong from the Northeast, we always got to say everybody's at an undisclosed location, by the way. Sally Fernandez is coming at us today from the Southeast, and even Tran home from Europe. And everyone's seen the news story recently with Julian Assange from WikiLeaks. They came out with one of the most scandalous stories in a while with the CIA, and I know there was a lot of hype on this thing, like they were divulging all these secrets that the CIA was doing. And of course, we know the CIA, we know they're doing a lot of stuff in the NSA, but I guess they got into the how-to and all of that. So one expert, Matthew Green from Johns Hopkins, he comes out and says, the idea that the CIA and NSA can hack into devices is kind of old news, he says. Well, kind of it is.
Yeah. It is. I'm a thriller writer, as you guys know, and I've studied all of this. And if you read my books, they were written back in 2014, and I had written about these things. It is. It's relatively old news. I think the big news is the supercomputer called the Hammer. Have you heard about that?
No, I didn't hear about the Hammer. What is that? I heard about the screwdriver, but not the Hammer. What's the Hammer?
Oh, the Hammer is bad. This is a device. It's an actual supercomputer that's housed here in the United States, and it has been utilized anyways to spy on American citizens as well as Donald Trump. So
now, Ava, this isn't in the data center in Utah, right? This is somewhere else.
Yeah, it's separate. This is kind of an off the books kind of a thing.
Nobody James really knows Clapper, about it, I guess.
Well, I know about it because I've been tweeting about it all morning. But I have found some interesting articles about this, and I've been, you know, listening to a lot of news shows and things like that. But there is a big investigation going on right now, and I know a lot of people think that, you know, Mr. Trump is paranoid or whatever, but he's actually right. So they really did do this, and it'll all be coming out soon in the, you know, mainstream.
Well, the Washington Post agrees with you because they said anyone who thought that they could not spy on you was living in a fantasy world,
exactly.
Is what they came out. Yeah, so that's exactly what you're saying. Sally, did you hear ever this thing about the Hammer? You ever hear about this?
No, I've never heard about it. I found it fascinating.
Because I know you're into that stuff.
I thought, I thought it was coming out of the NSA, but this is interesting. But, you know, I think Ava just said it too. You know, we've been spying on people forever, and countries have been spying on us, and it will continue to go on. But the question is, to what level and to what degree can American citizens be protected?
Well, that really is the big question we're going to try to answer today on this thing here is, you know, do we have a right to privacy? And what's that balance of privacy versus security? How much of a conversation is going on in Europe with this, even in Denmark, specifically where you're from? And I mean, you're a journalist out there, just to tell people your background a little bit. You're a journalist. You play with a lot of different folks out there. What are you hearing?
Well, I think here in Europe, I mean, we know the story about NSA and how that, you know, we can be spied on, but somehow it's not really an issue here. I think people are still quite naive and they think, well, it's not really happening. They're trying to close their eyes, even though we know from Edward Snowden that it is actually happening. And a lot of people start, like myself, to have a small mark where, you know, I hide my camera on my computer. Just to be sure that nobody's spying on me while I'm at home.
Everybody's doing that. They're putting tape and stuff over their cameras and stuff.
Exactly. But still, I mean, you don't see in our newspapers or on our TV that you have talk shows or debates where this is the issue. So I think still here in Europe, we are in good faith. We're still quite naive. I mean, many people in Europe, they know that, you know, somebody out there might be evil and might have bad intentions, but still they are living in this sort of welfare state bubble. So they think, well, you know, we are protected by our constitution and our democracy. And, you know, I'm really having a hard time trying to tell people, listen, it is happening. You need to wake up. I mean, time is really changing and you cannot rely on those people that you normally would say you could rely on because actually our own governments is our enemies. And that's just completely, I mean, hysterical. And it's very hard for people that have been growing up, at least here in Scandinavia, where I come from, because we're so used to that there is no corruption. I mean, everybody's very honest. Everything is, you know, doing smooth and fine. And suddenly we see this change. So it's very, very hard for people in Europe to really understand what's going on.
Talk about what you just said a moment, and Ava, I know you'll have something to say about this for damn sure, probably Shelley too, I guess, but when you talk about government is kind of our enemy, and you're speaking of a lot of the governments in Europe specifically, but I guess a lot of people here would say the same thing. Is that what you said? Like, they're like the enemy or something?
Well, I just want to say that, I mean, Stalin, Joseph Stalin, which was the ruler of the Soviet Union, he would have loved Facebook. He would have loved Google. He would have loved, you know, all those possibilities because people are, you know, voluntarily, you know, putting out information about themselves and we can spy on people. So, I mean, he would have loved it. I mean, the Soviet Union would have loved this system.
You're so
because
right.
It could really, really gain a lot of information that was not possible even in the Soviet Union, where they really spied on people, because now we have all these technologies. And it seems that our governments is actually working behind the scenes against us, which we don't know. So it's actually the West, and I've said that before, you know that, Malcolm, because we talked about this before, that the West is becoming like the USSR. And people need to wake up and understand that this is what's happening, because here people are so, like I said before, they're naive. They think, okay, because they have turned democracy into a sort of religion. So they think we are protected by this democratic God, which is the state. But they're not. This is their enemy. And they need to wake up and understand that.
Well, what you're speaking about feeds right into the narrative of the Washington Post when they say anybody who thinks that they can't do this is living in a fantasy world. You're saying they're all living in a fantasy world.
Exactly, they are, and they need to wake up because, I mean, all the liberals, they have completely twisted reality, and they have, you know, exchanged the truth for a lie. So what is actually a lie is becoming the truth, and truth is becoming a lie. So you need really to have a very good sense of discernment.
Well, Malcolm, this is probably going to shock you, who knows me the best, and maybe I'm naive. I don't believe the government is out to get us. I believe we have different governments. We've had, you know, different administrations. We've had different motives. Our government right now is trying to make our government very small so that people have more control. I do think we need to spy, we need to wiretap when it comes to our national security. I have to have confidence to some level that the government is protecting. And we do have laws, and we'll have this investigation, and hopefully it won't go away in a whimper like a lot of the big scandals do. But you have to have some level of faith in your government. Otherwise, I think it's the liberals who just don't trust anybody. So maybe I am naive, but I think there's bad people. I think there's a lot of shenanigans going on. I think some of these investigations are warranted. But if we don't have faith in our government, we don't have faith in our laws, then we will fall apart.
I'm dying to hear your viewpoint on this, Ava Armstrong.
Well, it all began with 9/11 and the Patriot Act. That's when the unraveling of our constitutional rights began. And it was all for the greater good, you know. It was all, you know, so that we could catch terrorists, so we could, you know, monitor these bad people. Well, then the NSA was born. And, of course, the American public was completely, unaware of it until the whistleblower came out and told about it, Snowden. And, of course, you know, they're tracking him. They're waiting for him to make a false move, and they'll take him. You know, these are things that are infringing on our constitutional rights. I knew when the Patriot Act came about, it was all with good intentions. But isn't that the road that hell is paved with, you know? The good intentions are only good if they're utilized, as Sally said, by people who have some kind of value system, some kind of idea of right and wrong. Mm-hmm. And right now, I look at these people like Brennan and Clapper, and I think, no, these people, they don't have a sense of right and wrong.
I agree. I think the entire
They're doing what they're ordered to do. Well, who's at the top ordering this stuff?
I'm looking back at,
you know, George W. Bush, for example. A lot of different things have been discovered about him, you know, sort of in the aftermath of all this. And, you know, Obama, do I trust the Obama administration? Not one inch, not one bit.
Well, I absolutely agree with you there. But that's why, you know, that's why we have elections, and we have to get rid of some of these people. And that's why we need investigations. But, you know, with all of the stuff that goes on in our own country and homegrown terrorism, and perhaps if we had better intelligence before 9/11, 9/11 wouldn't have happened. So, you know, it's a slippery slope. I agree with you. But I don't know what we would do if we didn't have national security, which requires some of these terrible things to happen.
Let me just follow up. 9/11 happened because of visa overstays. That's how simple that was, okay?
It's if what? Overstays?
Overstaying visas.
Immigration.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yes, yes. This is how simple this is.
Right.
I mean, Amazon can do better than our government can, okay, at tracking things. You track a person that comes into your country, and then when his visa's up, you track that person, and they're out. You've got to get them out. This is not occurring.
But they're not doing that, Ava. They're not doing that.
40% of the people in this country illegally came here legally on a visa. We have 90 different visa programs. We have a fiancé visa. We have student visas. We have work visas. We have, you know, I mean, I could go on and on.
The mentally handicapped visa.
Yeah, I mean, it just continues. And but this is like a sieve. What you need to understand is that we have no borders. We have no security in this country. My God, no wonder people love their Second Amendment right here. It's the only real protection that you have, I'll be honest with you. It really is.
Interesting. That's a very interesting conversation, I find. You can see the mindset here even is a little different when you hear Ava and Sally. I mean, they're, you know, people. I think people here are a bit panicked. And when you mentioned a moment ago, Ava, Brennan and Clapper, it's like Brennan, Clapper and Comey. Oh, my. You know, it's like the Three Stooges of some sort, you know. But, you know, Sally, to your point, I don't know. I'm kind of losing faith at this point of the whole big picture. I'm not seeing a lot of good cats in government. I think that, and that's from all sides of the aisle. I mean, it's because government is, we've totally lost control. I mean, when this whole thing started and the framers put it together, I mean, you take a look at the early people who served our country. They got in, they served, they got out. It wasn't a career that they could lobby everything and get rich. In fact, most of the politicians, when they go into office, they're not wealthy people. And but when they come out, they're like super, super wealthy. Like they're multimillionaires many times over, but yet... And it's not like we pay them that kind of money. So where the hell do you think that money comes from? Did it fall from the sky or what? You know?
I absolutely agree with you. But we're still the best government in the world. And what do we do if we don't have this form of government? We've got to get rid of the bad guys. We've got to get rid of this political divisiveness. Mm-hmm. And that's why nothing gets accomplished. And so I don't know what the alternatives are. We still have the best system in the world.
Well, I agree. I agree with that. It is the best. It is the best. Yeah. And when you look back in history, I mean, you look at Abraham Lincoln and how he was vilified in the things that was done to that man. Mm-hmm. He was a great, great leader. And he took the arrows in the chest and literally died for his cause. This is not a very neat system of government, and it's meant to be messy. It's meant to be argumentative. It's meant to be, you know, we're supposed to throw ideas down and rally around and discuss them. I mean, our system of government is a republic, and it's meant to have debate. And some of the debate, yes, it's ugly, but it should be civil. I really believe it should be. But you know, there are times people become very passionate, and I'm one that you could throw in that category. I'm very passionate about the Constitution, though, because that's what really makes us different than every other government in the world.
Absolutely. We're run by laws, and that's why Gorsuch is so crucial.
True.
It is interesting. You both, obviously, we're patriots. I mean, because you say that, Sally, and then Ava, you say that as well, and it makes you think, it gives you pause a little bit when you look at the big picture of things, I think. But it really does become, instead of sitting and complaining about it all the time, I must be getting older. So I'm starting to act like an old fotchety son of a bitch who is so tired of all this baloney. And I never used to think that way, Ava. You know, it's like, but now it's like, I'm getting like paranoid and tired, and I'm fed up with these idiots. I don't have a lot of patience. I've got to admit to you right now. I don't have a lot of patience.
Well, the first thing you need to do is not watch news constantly.
Exactly.
Because I think that's a real kind of...
See, that's the problem. I'm a news commentator.
Yeah,
I'm a news junkie, and I'm tired of it.
Yeah, you have to pick and choose very carefully, I guess.
I go into convulsions lately. I can't, you know, you really can't. When I change the channel and watch these clowns, it makes me ill, really, really sick. And I want to vomit. You know, I want to vomit.
I contemplated stop writing political thrillers and start writing nursery rhymes or something. But
Humpty Dumpty, that'd be really cool, man. I mean, why not, right?
Publisher said, why don't you do like Grimm's fairy tales? It's like they were railing out about the British government. You know, what are you, nuts?
Well, that's, you know, it's where we come from. So that's how they do Parliament in Britain. They beat the hell out of each other, and then they leave the room and go out for a drink. And Eva's right to that degree.
What's really funny, though, I try to write romance, okay? And even the romance I'm writing right now is, it has a political thriller in the background going on. I mean, I can't stop myself.
Junkies, Ava. It's in our DNA.
You got to write a thriller about this Out Loud community we have here, Ava, in some way. Boy, this would be really cool, man. Really cool. I can see your mind working overtime on that.
We could be the Star Chamber. You know, remember that movie, The Star Chamber?
Yeah. What happens in there?
We're the ones that decide. We could sit around and decide, you know.
I told you, we need a think tank. We need a think tank on radio, and we need it to play out so people can hear the ideas.
I think one of the things that's happening, and in a positive way with this whole Trump election, is people are paying more attention to what's going on, more than they did before. And Ivan, you said something about how people just become so complacent. And I find that in Italy, you know, it's the government will take care of me. The government will take care of it. I just, you know, mind my own business and don't get involved. But I'm starting to see a shift that the populist movement is starting to take over in Europe to some degree. Do you find that?
Well, now I've been sitting here listening to your conversation about your government, and I agree with you that you need to have some faith in your government. And I agree with you that the American government is a fantastic system that is based on a fantastic constitution that gives a lot of freedom. I mean, America is probably the country in the world where you have most freedom. So it's something to protect. But I think we need to dig a little bit deeper, because what is the problem for the American government, and has been for quite some years, and also for a lot of European governments, is the moral corruption. We have a moral corruption everywhere. And like you said, Ava, that we have lost our moral compass. We don't know anymore how to distinguish between good and evil. And this is a spiritual disease throughout the Western world, everywhere.
Listen, hold on now. Eben, when you talk about moral compass and all, that is a perfect segue to get into pursuit of pleasure, which we're going to do just after a pause here. So, I mean, moral compass, the pursuit of pleasure, I like it. And there's a whole lot when, I wonder how many people are blocking the cameras on the computer screens, the phones, the tablets, why they're having sex and stuff like this here, because everybody's watching everybody now on these cameras, man. So you may think you have privacy and stuff, but do you really have privacy? So we got a lot ahead here to talk about with Ava, Sally, and Eben, and a collective group of us from all over the world here. We'll be right back in just a moment. We are excited indeed to be celebrating our one-year anniversary here at America Out Loud. And we could not have done it without you. Well, in short order, we've become one of the fastest-growing podcast and talk radio networks in the world. For all the latest news, entertainment, your blogging, and now web TV, as we celebrate our one-year anniversary here, and we'll see you back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Well, I'm not sure why we take our health for granted, but I know that many of us do, include me in that company. Recently, I had a couple of health scares that got my attention real quick. I started a new product called Healthy Cell. I took it for about 3 weeks, and man, I started to feel really good. I found myself sleeping better at night, had more energy in the day, and less stress and anxieties, and just feeling better overall. Well, with those kind of results, I knew I had to do something, so I reached to the company directly with a request to bring Healthy Cell back to America Out Loud, and here it is. Well, typically you'd pay $110 plus shipping and handling. Well, now you get it for just $79.99 for the monthly plan plus free shipping. That's right, they'll pick up the shipping, and you pay just $79.99. Use the code OUTLOUD on HealthyCell.com, or just click the banner on the front page of AmericaOutLoud.com.
I'm Ava Armstrong. I'm an author, and we have Eben Trenholm. She's calling in from Europe, and her voice is much sexier than mine. We're going to talk about life, liberty, and the pursuit of pleasure.
It ain't happiness. Although pleasure is happy.
Pleasure is happiness. And that was Malcolm Out Loud and Sally Fernandez, who is also an author. You've also written some. What else have you written, Sally?
Political thrillers, and political thrillers.
Okay, we're pretty much on the same page.
Except Ava, yours has got more sex in it.
Yes, it does.
Than Sally's.
I had to leave the sex out.
See, Sally, come on. the whole thing. What is life without a couple of orgasms? I mean, you got to get those in the books.
Well, yeah,
I had to take them out.
Oh, man. But Ava's now, has did, got, right,
did
Ava?
Did your publisher make you take out that stuff?
Yeah, I had to take them out because of the audience that I was going after.
Oh, okay. Well, that's interesting. That's something I just learned. Let's talk about pleasure now that we're on the topic.
So Ava, how come you can put them in with with what you do, but she can't? That's not fair.
I'm independent.
Okay.
I publish my own books. It's called Dark Horse Publishing. Actually, my husband owns it, but and he's actually my publisher. So, and he edits and does other things.
So
too.
You're sleeping with your publisher. You finally admit.
I am.
You,
oh, it's wonderful.
Dirty rat, you. Dirty rat.
I get to sleep with my editor.
Well, there you go.
You guys are all screwed up, I'm telling you. How about, even who are you sleeping with?
Well, that's a private matter, isn't it?
We won't tell anybody. Is. We're not going to tell.
And actually, I think that Western people are too far occupied or too much occupied with pleasure. I mean, here, for instance, here in Europe, it's all about food. I guess you have the same trend in the United States.
Well, hold on, you food. Use food for pleasure? You're using the food for the pleasure?
No, but I mean, nobody has the energy to have sex anymore. So now,
get out of here!
All sorts of cooks on TV. You have so many programs which is about how to cook. It's everywhere. It's everywhere.
I have to move there.
It's terrible.
Hey, but there's no sex there. There's food, and you want to move there?
I don't know. Food is good too, though. It is. It's very good.
And I think it is a sort of cultural bulimia somehow, because people are just obsessed with food here. And so, I mean, and you see, I mean, there's simply too much food everywhere.
Yeah, but are they getting overweight?
At the same time, they're always trying to lose weight. I mean, so it's completely insane. So I think it is a sort of, you know, sort of existential emptiness. So you want to fill your mouth and your stomach with something delicious because you feel so empty on the inside. That is the way
that I
actually interpret this idea about pleasure all the time. You know, want to go on a vacation. You should, you know, do good things to yourself. It is a kind of emptiness that we're trying to cover or we're trying to help somehow. So I think the European culture is really suffering from some kind of existential emptiness.
Eben, I want to ask you something.
I sound very, very boring. I am a Catholic, but I'm not boring.
Yeah, well,
I love to have pleasure.
I've hung out with you actually, Eben, and you're boring. So I'm not going to agree with you at all.
She just gave me a great idea to write a scene in a novel, though.
What?
Good. So at least we are creative here.
Yeah, that was deep. I like that. I like the way you worded it, and I may use that if you don't mind.
Where should she send the check, Eben?
Actually, I once wrote a column about this cultural bulimia. I can send it to you because I described that we were obsessed with food simply because we were so empty on the inside.
I think that's true. I agree.
I think you see that in the U.S. I think some of the reasons that there's so many overbeast people is just they find no hope in their life, whether it's financial or any of their aspirations aren't being met. But I think the obesity in this country leads to that same theory to a large degree.
Yeah, and I think that's why we are pursuing pleasure so much. But it's very superficial, and many people here in Scandinavia are on happy pills, antidepressive medicine, a lot of alcohol consumption, even though Denmark is, you know, CNN, they have a kind of survey every year, and I think two or three years in a row, Denmark has been ranked the most happy country in the world.
You remember that? And I did that survey on radio. It's true. It's true.
Yeah, but
you're saying...
But you know, there is a small explanation because if you ask Danish people or Danes in general if they're happy because there are no corruption here and this welfare state takes care of everything and you know there are kindergartens and you know all the stores are full of stuff, but if you ask Danes, were you happy yesterday? Almost everybody says no. So on a personal level, people are not happy, but they are overall, in general, happy with the country. But on a personal level, they're definitely not happy. So I think you need to have that explanation as well. It depends on how you ask.
Eben, I want to ask you something. Do Europeans consider Americans lazy and or fat?
Some do, I would say, but I don't
think
it is.
Do you think we're lazy and fat?
No, actually, I love America. And sometimes I don't understand why I was born in Scandinavia, because I think I should have been born in the United States. But I mean, God might have had an idea why I'm born here. But no, I really like Americans. And I think Americans are much more interesting, more open. And you also have a different kind of culture than we have here. We have very fine cultures here in Europe. Of course, Europe is very old. We have our history. But America is able to think bigger than we do here in Europe, and I like that.
That is a great point. Thinking big is important. You really are one of the most pro-American Europeans I know, and you are.
There are others.
Yeah, but you are too. You're like a sister from another mother kind of program, you know, as they call it, you know. But you always talk very favorably about this country, and which is really cool. And you follow the politics here, like, well, I guess everybody around the world right now is following Trump. They were telling me in Australia, our co-host Dean Menzel from Australia on this show told me that, you know, that in Australia, they're like 24/7 Trump news. Is that what's happening in Europe, by the way? Like all the time, incessantly, like Trump, everything, they're being Trumpified?
I haven't read one positive story about Trump since he was elected at all in any media here. So that's why I have to go to the U.S. media to get some positive stories about him.
You know, it's very skinny in the U.S. media, too. There's very little positive about Trump.
You know, I was in New York the night that he got elected to cover it. And I have never had such an experience in New York as that night, because the city went totally dead. I was at Times Square, and normally, you know, it's very lively. There's a lot of people all the time. It's very, very fast energy. And there was this big Fox News screen. And when people started to understand that it was actually Donald Trump who was going to be the next president, the square totally died. It was a total depression. I talked to a cab driver, and he said he'd been there for decades. He said he'd never seen anything like that. And, you know, I had this Make America Great Again cap on, and people were always trying to attack me. People look at me in a very mean and aggressive way. It was really very, very strange. It was a strange, strange feeling. I mean, Donald Trump is a New Yorker, so you could at least expect, because it was a man who always lived in the city, that the city somehow would celebrate him. But there was none of that. I mean, the next day I went all the way down to the south end, and I expected to see some shop that would be a sign saying "Congratulations, Mr. President." There was nothing, nothing. It was like nothing had happened.
Do you think Donald Trump is Donald Trump is the Antichrist?
No, The reason why they don't like him is because he's going to defeat the anti-Christian powers. He's already doing this, and that's why they hate him.
Do you think Barack Obama was the Antichrist?
He's promoting Christian values. I don't know if he was in person, but he was working for those diabolical forces. That's absolutely my opinion.
I love this woman.
He was working for the dark side. That's clear.
Ava's got something to say.
I said I love her. I do. She's brilliant.
Yeah, she is. Yeah.
But it's so fascinating to hear that point of view coming from Europe, because you're absolutely right. You don't hear that. I mean, it's anti-Trump. We get the Herald Tribune on both sides of the pond. And over here, it's got one point of view. Over there, it's totally negative about Trump, the U.S. It's just amazing. But boy, what you experienced in New York is very, very telling in terms of why we are so polarized.
Mm. I think that actually it's a kind of civil war going on concerning values and views in general.
Exactly.
And it's very clear. It's also going on here in Europe. And so we already have a kind of civil war that is starting to evolve, I think.
Wow.
Yes. So getting back to the pleasure part, and, you know, no, we are talking about that. But I think we're all on the same page that we think that the pleasure part is not really good without some kind of moral compass. That's kind of at the heart of every novel that I write as well. And it probably is for you too, Sally. But, you know, those big picture items, you know, the right and the wrong. I mean, it may feel good at the moment to do something, to eat that pie or to, you know, go to bed with somebody or do something else. But in the long run, you know, you have to really look at, you know, what good this will do for you as a person. And that's really why I've cut a lot of things out of my life. It sounds crazy, but I mean, I've cut a lot of negative people out of my life. I've cut a lot of news out of my life. I mean, I'm very, very limited. As I only have 24 hours a day, and about 8 hours I'm sleeping. So, you know, you really have to kind of look at things that way. And you really do have to have something that gives you pleasure, I think, every day. And for me, that joy comes from writing and interacting with people like you guys and, you know, interacting with family and really good friends. So that's my pleasure.
Wow. What else?
I think, I think you're pointing to something very, very important, and is you have to examine your own life first and start with yourself. Because a lot of people, when I go out and give talks, they say, okay, so how do we come back to some kind of sound morality? And I always say, I mean, look at your own life first, instead of just, you know, point your finger at all the others, the politicians, the priests, the bishops. I mean, look at yourself, because if you start to adjust yourself, or you start to change things, leave things out, say goodbye to something and try to focus on other things, people will be inspired by what you do. So yes, the best thing is, there is an old saying that goes like this: if you want to change the world, start with yourself.
Because people do a lot of complaining.
This is the way to go.
They complain. The people who complain, the negative sayers, the problem is that they're, like you say, their fuel is everybody else. They don't take care of their own home. They don't have an introspective moment in where they look at themselves, which is what Ava was just kind of talking to. But, you know, that's why Ava's so well grounded. I mean, and it's actually why all of you women are, actually, because you're not complainers and bitches that complain all the time. And so you're not complaining bitches. I mean, you know, so
I'm a little bit of a troublemaker, though.
Well, I know that, but we like that about you, Ava. It's cool, man. It's cool. And but you can get away with it because you're sincere, at least. And so that's why you're a different caliber women, you know, for real. So, I mean, you're kind of the stars of the show, man. I mean, when you take a look at it, and it's interesting. But so we're really not talking about this pursuit of pleasure in a way that I think when you take a look at all this spying going on, how much is this kind of impacting people? I think, and you know, even you just hit on some things that really like floored me. I had no idea that Europeans were sexually deprived, and yet they're eating and getting fat by the moment, you say. And so, I mean, this is not a happy place if they're not having sex. So, and then you got all this spying going on, and nobody trusts the government and everything else. So what's going on out there that nobody's getting laid? What's happening there? Can you tell us?
They are very, very busy to defend Islam and say that it is a peaceful religion. That's what people are occupied with.
They're defending it?
And whenever we see a terror attack, you know, half of Europe would say this has nothing to do with religion. And this is what the people are occupied with, I think, a lot. All these ideas I think we also have a problem with evil. And I think it sounds really strange to bring that up right now, but I think one of the reasons why it goes so wrong, and it's also connected to having lost the moral compass, is that we have no idea how to identify evil. So people are very busy with trying to show that they are good people. For instance, that we have open borders and we should welcome a lot of migrants, and everything should just be one harmonious society, because then we feel like we're good people. People are obsessed with the idea of being good, or to expose themselves as a good person.
I call that the Angela Merkel disease.
Exactly. But it's actually because people are not any more capable of distinguishing or I would say identifying evil. And that's why we see that our society is crumbling, because in every society there will be attacks by evil. So you need to defend yourself. You really need to fight back. And we have lost that ability.
Pick up on what you said and Ava said, you know, because of all of the sound bites we get and the constant barrage we get on our social network, and you're right, Ava, stay away from the TV every now and then, we've become so numbed to what evil is. I mean, there was, I don't know if you guys saw this, it happened in Chicago, this child was raped, it was put on Facebook, and nobody called the authorities to say it was going on. I mean, I don't think people know how to identify evil because they're so numb to what's going on in the world and what they can't differentiate. And I think that's we're kind of, we have this vacuous soul and we're kind of lost.
We've reached a new low, I think. And that's really tragic in many ways. One of my novels, the very second novel that I wrote, was titled Encountering Evil. And it's funny to listen to even when she spoke of that, because you have to recognize it. Mm-hmm. And that's what that novel is about. And it's about infiltration of an Islamic compound here in the United States. And what that looked like. And so you're living it through the character as he infiltrates this compound. And the things that he sees, at least I show you as a reader, what Islam is about, the subjugation, the torture, the horrific things that go on inside behind closed doors to children and to women and to young boys. And it's really disgusting, but I felt like I had to write a novel about this. It was almost like I was just touched by God to write it. I know that sounds crazy, but I had to somehow just talk about this and show it to people, as ugly as it is. And it's very important to be able to recognize evil and what your reaction will be to it. You have to just be prepared. I think you have to be prepared every day to encounter it. Because it is there and it's very real.
I want all three of you to ask you to think about this when we come back in a moment here. I want you to really think about this. Ava, you're talking about a new low, which I think a lot of people would agree with. And Sally, you talk about that Facebook that story that's been pretty hot over the last day or so. And I do know the story you're talking about. I think most understand that social media, mm-hmm. it can be very dangerous for a lot of reasons. But here's one where it could have done some good, and nobody acted on it to do a damn thing. I want you to think about this. If this is what we're experiencing right now, and like I think we're just in the early stages of this next act, okay? So if we shut the lights off right now, if this could really happen, and we came back 100 years from now, 100 years in 2117, okay? What would it be like? What would it be like in all of this regard, into the spying stuff, that new low, what happened with the Facebook thing? Do people care anymore? Do they care less? What happens 100 years from now? You know, I wonder. We'll find out. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Sally Fernandez with Life, Liberty, and the Pursuit of Pleasure. And the other co-hosts today are Ivan Thranholm, Ava Armstrong, and the ever-charming Malcolm Outloud.
Yours truly, I am here. Thank you. It's good to be with all of you today from across the world and around the globe. What's going on, Sally?
Well, we were talking about what the world would look like 100 years from now, dealing with the confusion we have, our social network, the problems that our children are having. It's kind of a mess right now. I'd like to think 100 years from now, we get smarter, we learn some of our lessons, we clean up our government, and we inform people so they just demand a little bit more. Mm. Wow. Ava, what do you think?
You are an optimist, girl.
I think it's going to go back to the beginning. And this is going to sound really weird, but I think there will be no public schools. I think children will all be homeschooled. The mm-hmm. family unit will become very tight, very very mm-hmm. special. And I think that people will work from home, obviously, electronically. I think robots will have all of the jobs that are like driving, waiting on people. Or I think 99% of commerce will be done online. And I think there will be, like I said, these family units. There'll be extended family as well. But they'll be like little clusters, and that's how the children will grow up. It'll be just like back in the old days when people grew up
nuclear families.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Yep, and having a life on a farm or something like that. But it won't be on a farm. It will be these cluster type groups, and I think that's what I envision, anyways.
And now, before we go further, that vision you see, Ava, do you see that there are, at that moment that you have that vision, and I get that vision, do you see that there are a lot of bad people around? You know, back to that family unit, we're at home, we have our guns, the kids are at school at home, life has changed a bit, a lot of robots around. Mm-hmm. Are there a lot of bad people out for us at that point, or have things transitioned?
I think there will always be that, like a zombie group of people. Okay, you know, call them what you want, but there'll be the people that don't want to work, or they're addicted to drugs, or they're, you know, having other issues. That will be the danger part. It will be the, you know, kind of the unleashing, because I believe 100 years from now, I think policing will be much different than it is now.
Yeah, totally, totally. But let me ask you this now, please. I got to ask you, what happens to Islam that 100 years from now, in your vision of what you see? And I'm talking about the bad guys. What happens to Islam?
Well, I think in the United States, there are over 300 million guns or something like that. And I can't even remember how many rounds of ammo, but the statistics are just incredible. I really think the United States will be, there may be cities like New York or LA or Chicago or something where populations of Islamic people will live, but I really don't think they're going to live in the smaller, the flyover country, they call it. I just don't think it will be comfortable for them, because I think all of these things will be rolled back. We can't afford to have 18 interpreters in a hospital setting. We can't afford to have, we can't even afford public schools right now. I mean, it's crazy, you know? So a lot of things will change. I think it's all going back to the beginning. It's all, if you live in this country, you'll have to learn to speak English, and you'll have to learn to, you know, live under our laws. You won't be able to have pockets of Sharia law like in Dearborn, Michigan. You won't be able to have, you know, four wives and be on welfare. It's just not going to happen. There will, and it was very interesting, even mentioned this, that we're in a civil war. Yes, we are. We are in a civil war, and it's beginning right now. And I'll tell you what, the people are going to take this country back. The working class people will take this country back. They did when they elected Trump. So I don't look at this as a bad thing necessarily. I look at it as potentially a good thing.
Eben, if you take it the 100 years out, before you answer the other part of the question, tell me first, and tell all of us, please, because you come from a different perspective, what does it look like 100 years from now in regards to Islam first, before you answer the rest of the question? What does it look like?
Well, if the working class, like Eva just talked about, and the right wings, the Republicans, if they don't come back to Christianity, to the Christian roots, and revive the Christian faith, Europe and the United States will be a caliphate. It means that we will have the Muslim faith to dominate the Western world, the whole Western world. Because the problem is that the liberals and the radical Islamist, they have made a kind of unholy alliance. They're working together to completely destroy the Christian culture. So we need to understand that this is their goal, is to destroy the Christian culture. And it's very, you know, I cannot understand why the liberals are in bed with the Islamists, because the Islamists,
they want the votes. They want the votes.
They will, of course, kill the liberals, because they don't care at all about their idea about freedom and all those kind of values they have. But the hatred they have against Christianity, the liberals, are so strong that they're willing to go to bed with Islam. And that says something about how deep the hatred against God is, this kind of rage against God. So we are in a spiritual warfare. And if the Christian church and the Christian people in the United States and in Europe, if they don't wake up and ask God to intervene, because that's what they can do with their prayers, I think it looks really, really grim. And we have to understand. I mean, look at Turkey. They always dreamed about conquering Europe. And now it seems like they're going to make it, because Erdogan, he said a couple of weeks ago, he said to all Turks in Europe, you are getting, each of you get five children, and the future of Europe is yours. Because the Europeans don't get any children anymore because they just want some sexual gratification. They don't want to make babies. So, I mean, it's actually realistic. They will conquer Europe just by demographic, not even by just, you know, trying to convert us or kill us, but just having more children.
Yeah, I've been reporting on that now for some time.
It's real. It's real.
Yeah, we've been reporting on that for some time. Europe's in a lot of trouble, actually, for in a lot of the regard of what you're talking about.
But you're next. But Malcolm, you are next because you have the same tendency in the United States.
Exactly.
And so, I mean, you should really look to what's happening in Europe because in a couple of years, that will be your problem, too.
Now, Muhammad Gaddafi said once that you never have to fire a shot. You know, in 25 years, it will be a Muslim world. So, I mean, it's just the propagation. It doesn't, you know, they don't have to.
Well, this is what they're predicting in many, many ways. But, you know, Eben, you said some very fascinating things there that I really, really was an eye-opener to me. And I'm sure it was to you, too, Eben, Sally. But in regards to her view on this with Islam, and I've never heard it quite put that way when you talk about them in bed with the liberals and the Islamists and what that really looks like, is so much that it's a head scratcher at times. I can't comprehend it even. I sit there and I'm wondering what the motive is, but kind of I have to give kudos to Ava a moment because she answered that back the way I believe. It really is about votes. It's about votes. It's about power. That's what they're after is the votes and the freaking power. I mean, that's really what they're after. And they're selling out. And what makes me so sad is they're selling us out. They're selling the whole program out. And I got a lot of strong liberal friends, Democrat friends, as well as conservative. I got obviously more conservative than liberal because their philosophies are much more aligned. But and they're cool people. They're really cool people. I wonder at times, what's going on? I mean, what kind of Wheaties are they eating in the morning, man? You know, what's going on?
I mean, I have the secret weapon to defeat Islam, and it's standing right before us. The females in that faith who are being tortured and denigrated and stoned to death and having their genitals mutilated. And talk about, boy, we're supposed to be talking about pleasure, aren't we? This is the most barbaric kind of ideology I've ever read about or met in my entire life. And I think the only way it will stop is if women stop it. And what they have to do is actually turn on the men. And if it comes down to them living or the man living, guess who would it be? Guess who it would be in my situation? I mean, the women have to, it's going to be 100% turnaround, but they have
I mean, Ava, you know, here in Europe, I mean, you have so many young girls who are putting on the headcloth.
And they wear it proudly.
They are telling on TV that this is an expression of their freedom, and they're very, very happy to have chosen that kind of life. You have, you know, every week you have Danish women converting to Islam, and they find a lot of, you know, a pleasure in that. So, you know, I don't really think that what you're saying is going to happen. I think
because it's a religion. They're entrenched. These women believe in the religion. And they believe in the tenets of the religion. So, you know, it's hard to imagine that women will think that way, but it's entrenched in their culture. It's entrenched in their religion.
A lot of women, at least here in Europe, they lost their feminine identity. They lost the motherhood because of all these feminists that came out of the 68 movement. And they actually lost as women. So they see somehow if they convert to Islam, they will probably get it back somehow. And I mean, the men are very masculine. And, you know, a lot of women are actually attracted to this kind of masculinity. You know, there was a TV show here in Denmark a couple of weeks ago where there were three women that were portrayed who had all converted to Islam, Danish women. And it was interesting because they all came with very messy lives. One has had been raised in a family where there were alcohol abuse. The other one was into some kind of violent environments. And the third one was just a wild teenager that couldn't find any meaning in her life. So they all explained how Islam gave them structure. They gave them some rules, and they actually felt more free because they were in this kind of frame. So what I was thinking is that Islam is now coming to clean up all the mess from this cultural relativism, you know, the 68 movement, all the divorces, all the messy lives, the sexual liberation that, you know, really only hurted people, and all the women that lost their dignity by being mothers. Now Islam is offering this kind of structure and those kind of values in a very, I would even say, perverted the way. But that's reality, because Christianity and the Christian church is not offering those women the same values, or at least they're not trying to do this. And this is the problem. I mean, normally I say it's not the strength of Islam that is the problem, it's the weakness of the Christians. So we don't see the Christian church trying to step up and trying to compete. They're just talking about dialogue and being good people and being, you know, nice people.
I know.
And I think it's terrible to really to look at that so many young people are now attracted to the Muslim faith. I mean, they are tweeting 100,000 tweets per day to inspire young people to read the Quran.
That's true.
I wish that, you know, all Christian churches in the Western world would do the same, but, you know, they feel embarrassed by the gospel, so they're not doing this. They just want to have some kind of, you know, meaningless dialogue.
Not any one of you ladies asked me what I thought it was going to look like 100 years from now, so you didn't really give a rat's ass what my opinion was. So, I mean, come on, neither of you, how ignorant that is. I asked all of you, and not one of you asked me back what I thought. You didn't give a rat's ass, so I'm going to tell you
right now.
I care. Well, then ask me the question, please.
Mal, what do you think it will look like 100 years from now?
You know, that feels like my sister talking to me, because they used to call me Mal, and she just did that. No one does that anymore today, and Ava just said, Mal, they used to call me that. Okay, sis, let me tell you what I think. I think that I think we're at the moment of truth, and I think that back to Donald Trump, there's a reason he was elected to office, to high office. I know a lot of you people don't like him out there that might be listening. I know a lot of people do. And even, and you and I have spoke about this on radio on multiple times, he's a man who was sent here for this reason at the time. I think he's a product of, I mean, of what's got to be good about us. And I know it kind of sounds like an oxymoron, because he has said some pretty stupid things, which has really irritated a lot of people. But again, he's a bit of a showman as well, and I think that's what's got him into a lot of trouble, where people are in a frenzy. And back to what you were saying earlier, Eben, like, okay, like, they don't even give him the time of day, or they're not even celebrating, or they, you know, they're throwing things at you because you got Make America Great hat on. But, you know, Trump brought a lot of that on himself with some of these ridiculous comments he made, and he pissed a lot of people off. He created a lot of enemies. But the problem is, we're at a moment of truth right now, and that moment of truth is this. Islam is clearly out for Christianity. Make no mistake about it. And I'll argue this with anybody, because it's a gospel truth. They want Christianity gone. They want it dead. And and therefore, this whole talk that the media has spun, this media baloney and the politicians, there's nothing peaceful about this religion.
Mm-mm. The human condition is to overcome that kind of subjugation, okay? Mm-hmm. And eventually, I think it will be overcome. And I only think it will with women. I believe that firmly.
Back to that vision, Ava, then, of 100 years. Say, here's what happens then.
Yeah, what Eben's telling me about, you know, the young girls that are all excited, and, you know, they're buying into this feminine, you know, baloney. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the feminist baloney. They're going, you know, with all these guys that are animals. They're freaking animals.
Ava Armstrong, Sally Fernandez, Eben Tranholm, Malcolm Out Loud, to be continued.